Translation, my dear King, family members in this material world go under the name of wife and children, but actually they behave like tigers and jackals. A herdsman tries to protect his sheep to the best of his ability, but the tigers and foxes take them away by force. Similarly, although a wise man wants to guard his money very carefully, his family members take away all his assets forcibly, even though he is very vigilant. Purport one Hindi Buddhist song, Ginka Dakin Raka Bhagani Pala Pala Rahu Chusek. During the daytime, the wife is compared to a witch, and at night she is compared to a tigress. Her only business is sucking the blood of her husband, both day and night. During the day, there are household expenditures and the money earned by the husband. The cost of his blood is taken away at night during sex pleasure. The husband discharges blood in the form of semen. In this way, he is led by his wife both day and night, yet he is so crazy that he very carefully maintains her. Similarly, the children are also like tigers, jackals, and foxes. As tigers, jackals, and foxes take away lambs, despite the herdsman's vision of protection, children take away the father's money, although the father supervises the money himself. Thus, family members may be called wives and children, but actually they are plunderers. Every year, the plows over his grain field, completely uprooting all weeds. Nonetheless, the seeds lie there, and, not being completely burned, again come up with the plant sown in the field. Even after being plowed under, the weeds come up densely. Similar to the greenhouse, the ashram is a field of fruit of activity. Unless the desire to enjoy family life is completely burned down, it grows up again and again. Even though camphor may be removed from a pot, the pot nonetheless retains the aroma of camphor. As long as the seeds of desire are not destroyed, the fruit of activities are not destroyed. Prabhupada, unless one's desires are completely transferred to the service of the Supreme Personality of God, the desire for family life continues. Even after one takes sannyas, sometimes in our society is gone a person out of center and takes sannyas, but because the desires are not burned completely, he again takes to family life, even at the risk of losing his prestige and disgracing his good name. These strong desires can be burned out completely when one fully engages in the service of the Lord and devotional service. Sometimes the conditioned soul and household life, being attached to material wealth and possessions, disturbed by gadflies and mosquitoes, and sometimes locusts, birds of prey, and rats give him trouble. Nonetheless, he still wanders down the path of material existence. Due to ignorance, he becomes lusty and engages in fruitive activity. Because his mind is absorbed in these activities, he sees the material world as permanent, although it is temporary, like phantasmagoria, a house in the sky. Prabhupada, the following song is sung by Narottam Das Thakura, Hankrai Mahnahoya, Nitya Pada Pasariya, Asatya Satya Kurimani. Due to forgetting the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda and puffed up by material possessions, wealth, and opulence, one thinks the false temporary material world to be an actual fact. This is material disease. The living entity is eternal, blissful, and despite miserable material condition, he thinks the material world to be real and factual due to his ignorance. Sometimes in this house, in the sky, conditioned soul drinks, eats, and has sex. Being overly attached, he chases after objects of the senses just as a deer chases a mirage in the desert. Therefore, there are two worlds, spiritual and material. The material world is false, like a mirage in the desert. In the desert, animals think they see water, but actually there is none. Similarly, those who are animalistic try to find peace within the desert of material life. It is repeatedly said in different chapters, there is no pleasure in this material world. Furthermore, if we agree to live without pleasure, we are not allowed to do so. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, material world is not only full of misery, but also temporary. If we want to live here amid miseries, material nature will not allow us to do so. It will oblige us to change bodies and enter another atmosphere full of miserable conditions. So here we have another explanation of further aspects of the material forest. So in the forest there are tigers and jackals. So these are compared to the wife and the children. Though it's not very complementary to family life, the analogy is used because due to wife and children, all one's money is taken away, just as the thieves take away one's treasure. The thieves were considered to be the senses. So now we have other persons in the form of wife and children who depend on the man, and therefore he has to work very hard and support them. So the wife and children here compared to tigers and jackals, which attack and steal away the shepherd's sheep or whatever, or they attack the person and cause him pain. So that is one aspect of material life. One has dependence, and then the dependence will take away the money also, just like plunderers also. So, another example is given here of the seeds in the ground. Someone plants seeds, but there are a lot of weeds. And you may try to pull the weeds out, but again they may grow up. So there's a continual effort to keep pulling out all these weeds. So this is compared to attraction to family life. And even though we may try to get rid of the attachment, still, again, the desire springs up again. In other words, very difficult to get rid of the desire to enjoy in the material world. And another example is given of being bit by mosquitoes, horseflies, and other things, being annoyed by different birds and rats, etc. So there are all sorts of disturbances in the material world which will affect one's wealth and one's property, etc. So these are the other disturbances, flies, etc. And then he sees a house in the sky. This, of course, is illusory, Gandharvapura. So it doesn't actually exist, it's actually illusory. But the Gandharvapura is very, very beautiful and attractive, full of all sorts of enjoyment. So that illusion is compared to our aspirations in the material world. Perhaps to make a lot of money, buy a big house, enjoy very nicely, etc. So this is the Gandharvapura that the man sees in the forest. Therefore it means all these false goals that we have. Actually, the Gandharvapura is an illusion. It doesn't actually exist. Of course we know the material world does exist, it's actually real. But upon this real world, we superimpose our aspirations for enjoyment. That is the illusion. So yes, the material world is real. There are forests, there are rocks, there are trees, there's money and so many things. But the illusion arises because we think that we can derive eternal pleasure from these different arrangements that we make. So that is what the Gandharvapura is, the city of the Gandharvas. It is our superposition of enjoyment upon the material world, which is actually false, because that material elements will not give us that enjoyment. Material body will not give us that enjoyment. The enjoyment is caused by senses contacting sense objects. So this is a material interaction. Ultimately, the soul cannot derive any pleasure from that. So, spirit cannot derive pleasure from matter. Just like the fish cannot be an enjoyer on land, only in the water. So the jiva in the material world is like the fish out of water, because he is spiritual and material world is matter. So this is not actually possible for the jiva to enjoy matter, because it's different. Just as the fish, when he's on the land, cannot enjoy because his nature is to be in water. So, therefore, our attempts at enjoyment in the material world are also false. Very impossible, because of the contrary nature of the jiva with the material world. Yet, we keep trying. Why? Because of that illusion. So the illusion takes place by means of certain material things, that is ahankara and desire, etc. So we identify with the material body, and then the material body goes through different interactions, and some of these we think are called pleasure, some of them are called pain. So Brother Jiva identifies with the material body and its pleasure and pain, so to speak, even though it is actually not pleasure and pain because it's only interactions of matter with matter. Nevertheless, the Jiva experiences all sorts of things in this way, due to false identification. Just as in a dream, we dream of that we are that dream body, or in the same way when we're waking, then we associate with this body. Both actually are false because they're not us. The Atma is completely separate from that. So those experiences are, in one sense, unreal, because they exist only in relation to material body and material identification. If we don't identify with them, then we no longer have that experience. They are false. So this is the nature of the living entity in the material world. He is looking at this phantasmagoria, or the false city in the sky, and thinking there's so much enjoyment there, but actually it is illusory. In this way, the jiva is wandering around in this particular forest, trying to get his enjoyment, and at the same time, it's a useless endeavor because of this contradiction of the nature of jiva with the nature of the material world. Yet the illusion continues, birth after birth after birth. Why? As I said here, that it is like the weeds growing up again and again and again. It's very difficult to destroy the desires to enjoy in the material world. Though it is actually contrary to the nature of the jiva, it's actually impossible. Still, the desire itself is difficult to get rid of. What is that desire ultimately? The desire is actually in the jiva. The jiva has a desire for enjoyment independent of the spiritual world and the Lord. Because of that, he accepts the ahankara and the false identification with the body, and therefore attempts to enjoy in the material world with his senses and body, etc. In the material world. This is the misfortune of the jiva. So this is what we call avidya, or ignorance. The jiva's desire for separate enjoyment. So when we come out of ignorance, that we recognize that we are not material bodies. That's step one. Step two is we realize that we are not the enjoyer. Supreme Lord is the enjoyer. And we should give enjoyment to Him. Now the result of that is that when we do that, we give up our desire for enjoyment, we get enjoyment, we get bliss. So this is the paradox. Whereas, we want to get our enjoyment in the material world, what do we get? We get suffering. When we give up the desire for enjoyment and give that enjoyment to the Lord, then we get our real pleasure, our ananda. So, when we strive for a separate enjoyment, that is called avidya, or ignorance. This is the root cause of our desires in the material world, covering of the material body, actions in the material world, accruing karma, getting the results of karma, and doing further action. So the attempt to erase that is very difficult, as it was said here. It's like trying to pull weeds out, and again the weeds grow up. So attempts to remove one desire is not very successful, because another desire will spring up. Another desire will spring up, another one. So we have to go back to the root eventually. The root is that avidya. If we don't get rid of that, then again, desires will spring up and the karmas will continue. So, there are two several processes of destroying that avidya. One is the attempt to destroy the false conception that I am the material body. I am Atma, I am eternal spiritual nature. So that is the process of jnana. Another way is to stop functions of the mind, or not just the mind, but all of the mental functions, the chitta, conscious, material consciousness. That is thoughts, memories, desires, impressions, etc. So that is the yoga process. Stop all the functioning of the chitta, material consciousness. And that's successful in the samadhi stage. It's all stopped. So when we stop all those functions, we stop therefore our desires, our false identification, etc. And all that mental body stops functioning. Then the consciousness alone functions, that is, the Atma functions independently without the coverings of mind, intelligence, ego, etc. So that is the yoga process. The process of bhakti is a little different. It's not an attempt to stop the senses or the mind or the body or anything from acting. And it's not an intellectual feat of trying to separate the Atma from the body. Rather, it is to activate a relationship with the Supreme Lord. So instead of simply destroying avidya by destroying the false conceptions of the material world and the subtle body, instead an inclination to the Lord is cultivated with the desire to please the Lord, not to get one's own enjoyment. So that is called the process of bhakti. So through that, the soul or the Atma develops an attraction for the Lord. Automatically, the avidya in the form of identifying with the material body and all the desires connected with enjoyment of the material world will disappear. So that is why the first symptom of bhakti is klesha gni, destruction of klesha, destruction of avidya, destruction of desire, destruction of karma. All of this takes place simply by engaging the Atma in the service of the Lord. The only qualification here is that the Atma must have that desire. So that is why it is said that Shraddha or faith is the qualification for bhakti. An inclination for the Lord within the Atma is the qualification for bhakti. When that is there, then we engage the senses of the mind, intelligence, etc. in the service of the Lord. And in doing so, we destroy avidya and desires, etc. So that is considered to be the most effective process. So that's why it was mentioned in the first verse of this chapter that the material world is very difficult to get out of, therefore one should seek out the lotus feet of the devotees and the Supreme Lord through bhakti, and then one can get out of the material world.
So in that case, they really have no chance of serving the Lord previously, and they have no chance of thinking of their own individual pleasure. They enjoy separately. They have been always eternally enjoying separately here. How they can think that they have to serve the Lord?
Well, that is through Agata Sukriti. By unconscious acts of bhakti over many lifetimes, gradually the soul develops an inclination for the Lord. That is the power of bhakti. Then they develop faith, and with faith they get mercy and knowledge from devotees, and then they advance.
And you see, the faith is already embedded in
bhakti. No. If they had faith, then everyone would do bhakti, but everybody doesn't do bhakti. There's demons, so many demons, and atheists, and whatever. So they have no faith. It's not intrinsic. If it were, there would be no material world anymore. Everyone would do bhakti and get out. But it's not. So that is why I said that it is the mercy of the devotees which will save the jivas, because it is their mercy that creates the agata sukriti, or accidental contact with bhakti, which gradually produces faith, and by faith then they take the process of bhakti. But without that, there's no hope for them.
them to draw, to give against the police. How it works now? When Jeevan writes to Prasad to draw, to give against the police.
That is the Kladini Shakti of the Lord. He bestows that upon the Jiva. When he serves the Lord, then the Lord releases his Kladini Shakti or this Shakti so that the Jiva can experience Ananda. Yes. I'm affectionate to my devotees, he says. I favor my devotees. He does not favor Gyanis and Yogis and Karmis or anybody else. Only those who take the process of bhakti.
You see, it's
Well, it depends. Sometimes the Lord he shows mercy to Putana, for instance. But the normal process is that obviously the teacher also pays attention to the good students, doesn't ignore them and throw them out of the school, and also pays attention to them. So, yes, sometimes there is a very bad student and they have to have special attention. So sometimes the case is there, the Lord is merciful also. In extraordinary cases. But normally the law of karma takes place, takes care of all of this. And so those who are completely unruly, they are taken care of by the law of karma. And when one is favorable, then the Lord is very merciful. That is, when one develops attraction for the Lord responds very favorably to that person. Otherwise, he lets karma take care of it.
Usually the teacher takes care of somebody who only attends the school. The person who is not attending the school, the teacher is not worried. So the Lord, you can say that the Lord is not worried about those who are not having faith. The teacher takes care of the weak students. But still, those who are not coming to the school itself, they...
So you're saying the school is those who are devotees? Well, one could say that in one sense, or you could say the school is the whole material world, and it's good and bad students, also. Depends on the analogy you want to use.
Grantana